Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, what is the significance of the film Blackboard Jungle? Was it A, it helped spark the rock and roll revolution in music? Was it B, it uncovered the CIA's connection to the Vietnam War? Was it C, it featured the song Catch a Falling Star by Perry Como? Or was it D, it is credited with establishing distance education as an effective learning option? So, what is the significance of the film Blackboard Jungle? And question number two, what is the title of the very first gold single certified by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA? Was that A, Glenn Miller's In the Mood, B, Perry Como's Catch a Falling Star, C, Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel, or D, the Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand? So, what is the title of the very first gold single certified by the RIAA? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March 14th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1904, that composer Johann Strauss was born. He was known for such compositions as The Blue Danube, born today in 1804. By the way, Johann's brother, composer Edward Strauss, was also born on this day, but 29 years later, in 1835. And it was 69 years ago today, 1956, that the Lerner and Lowe musical My Fair Lady opened on Broadway. It played for a record-breaking 2,717 performances, closing on September 29, 1962, after 6.5 years. And in international folk music news, we have this article titled, You Can Yodel and Don't Have to Be Conservative. Switzerland's Feminist Choir Rewriting Traditional Songs. Echo vom Eierstock is opening up the overwhelmingly male alpine folk music scene with new versions of lyrics about nagging wives and naive girls. This is published in The Guardian by Keja Saruga on the 10th of March, 2025. Alina Kaiser just wanted to yodel. And, living in central Switzerland, that didn't seem too much to ask for. But as a woman, you couldn't yodel in a choir unless you were already a professional. There were simply no options, she says. There were also the words to the songs portraying an idyllic alpine life, surrounded by pristine nature and overseen by a benevolent god. The men in charge and the women presented either as naive girls, self-sacrificing mothers, or nagging wives. Kaiser couldn't get past them. The beautiful melodies with these completely outdated lyrics. So, in 2022, she founded Switzerland's first feminist yodeling choir. And Echo vom Eierstock has been rewriting traditional yodeling songs and dragging the alpine folk music scene into the 21st century ever since. While they have no qualms about changing the words, they remain lovingly faithful to the musical tradition underpinning them. Yodeling is characterized by rapid changes in pitch, alternating between a low-pitched chest voice and a high-pitched head voice, while yodeling calls, such as the yodel-ai-hoo, that most people associate with the Swiss Alps, were probably used by cowherds over millennia to communicate from one hill to another and bring in the cows. The yodeling songs developed in the 19th century combine verses with a yodel refrain. The yodeling choral tradition was formalized in 1910 with the founding of the Federal Yodeling Association and became closely enmeshed with the country's spiritual national defense, a cultural movement that sought to strengthen Swiss values and traditions in the face of rising fascism in Europe, hence the insistence on promoting an idealized version of Swiss life. We wanted to defend the country with our values, our traditions, says Simone Felber, the choir's musical director. How do you do that? How do you reach people? With music, among other things. Today, the association includes 780 regional yodeling clubs, with about 12,000 members in total, and keeps a tight rein on yodeling traditions. Though there are also mixed and women's choirs, the scene is still overwhelmingly male, says Felber. The association is also very closed. It's difficult to get involved as an outsider. While leading yodeling workshops across Switzerland, she noticed that many more women were interested in the practice than men. And when Kaiser reached out to her about the choir, she saw an opportunity to create a space where women of all backgrounds could yodel together, regardless of skill level. While Echo vom Eierstock is the most prominent example of a sea change in the Swiss yodeling scene, it's not the only one. Felber, herself a classically trained mezzo-soprano, who is exploring new possibilities with folk music through a number of progressive-minded ensembles, was honored with the Swiss Music Prize in 2024, lauded for giving, quote-unquote, a new voice to yodeling and Swiss swinging singing culture. Echo vom Eierstock, a runaway popularity, means they have also had to become selective, capping membership at 50. This goes a bit against my philosophy, says Felber, but at some point you're simply at capacity. The choir brings together a diverse group of women, ranging in age from mid-20s to others well into their 70s, with some driving from Zurich or Bern for weekly rehearsals in the small town of Stans. While the choir is invariably labeled as left-wing, Bach finds that absurd. We never wrote down a political agenda and said, okay, we're going to fight for feminism now. We just do it by creating and singing together. Yet the lyrics, wrapped in four-part harmony and a soft, swift dialect, send an unmistakably feminist message. In traditional yodeling songs, Women are made out to be sweet, small, helpless, and defenseless when a man comes to call, says Felber, which we're not, and it doesn't correspond with our self-perception at all. In the version sung by the Eierstöcke, as the choir members call themselves, a dance no longer automatically ends in marriage. The girl and boy in a love song become me and you. And instead of thanking God, another song thanks life itself. They sing about wearing skirts and promise that when they get paid too little again, they fight back and don't stay silent. In one traditional song, a girl asks her mother, "Is dancing a great sin? Look, Franz is already waiting. May I go dancing with him?" And tells her later, "Don't worry, I'm not going to be a nun. Look at my curly hair. I saw how pretty I am in the mirror today." In the version performed by Echo vom Eierstock, the conversation is a radically different one, with the girl asking, "Does the world need more children? Should we still be mothers in this day and age? The world is a gift." Her mother reassures her, but the daughter counters, "You don't know in advance what kind of gift it is." At first, the choir commissioned local songwriters to rewrite lyrics, but over time, a songwriting group has formed within the choir that does a lot of the creative heavy hitting. "We started small and are figuring things out as we go along," says Felber. "It's an ongoing process and an exciting one." The article skips down, ends with this. "It's also what sets us apart from traditional choirs," adds Kaiser. "We don't say we've been around for 100 years and we've always done it this way. Dissenting opinions and discussions are welcome, and in the end, matters are always settled with a democratic vote," says Kaiser. "After all, we're in Switzerland." Unsurprisingly, the choir caused quite an uproar at the beginning and received its fair share of hate mail. But after the initial shock subsided, "the response has been overwhelmingly positive," says Kaiser. "They've performed at numerous local festivals and venues, and last year even in the Parliament building in Bern on International Women's Day. Their work has also kick-started some overdue introspection in the yodeling scene. I've had people tell me that they're listening to the words they're singing for the first time," says Kaiser. "At the heart of their work is a wish to make yodeling more accessible to everyone. A century after yodeling choirs were constricted into promoting an idealized version of Swiss life, the traditions and customs associated with them are often seen as old-fashioned and reactionary. Especially in times like these, I think it's incredibly important to set a counterpoint to this and say, 'You can yodel, and you don't have to be conservative,'" says Felber. "Everyone's allowed to do it." And in jazz music news, we have this article titled, "Eddie Lang, the Forgotten Godfather of the Guitar Solo." Eddie Lang was a jazz virtuoso who died tragically young, but he left a lasting mark on the most flamboyant, attention-grabbing way that a guitar can be played. This is published by Brandon Stoner, March 11, 2025, in Guitar.com. Eddie Lang's name almost never comes up in conversations about guitar heroes. Perhaps it's because in the time that he operated, the idea of a guitar hero was pretty much non-existent. But 90 years after his death, the impact this Italian-American musician had on guitar is pretty much unparalleled. forging almost single-handedly the role that the guitar would take as music evolved through the 20th century and beyond. In some ways, the lack of kudos given to Lang is understandable. He died tragically young. In that, too, he became something of a grim trailblazer for guitar heroes. And perhaps because of this, the players who he influenced have ended up overshadowing him. But the innovations he made to how the guitar is played and its role in a band context transformed it from a rhythmic background instrument to a melodic force at the forefront of songs, a role that would eventually shape popular music like no other instrument in the decades to come. Lang was technically brilliant, harmonically sophisticated, and an innovative collaborator that was a godfather of modern guitar. His origins. The man who would later be known as Eddie Lang was born Salvatore Massaro in Philadelphia in 1902. The son of an Italian-American instrument maker, he picked up violin at 7, then banjo, eventually shifted to the guitar with his first 6-string, fittingly crafted by his father, using the Lutheran skills that had been taught in the old school. At the time, banjo, horns, and piano were popular lead instruments in jazz bands. Guitar was part of the rhythm section and rarely took focus. But Lang would pioneer the idea that the guitar could become a lead melodic instrument, not something to be buried. Lang's classical music training and understanding of multiple string instruments gave him the perfect starting point to try something radical. In doing so, he would also innovate a whole new way of playing the instrument. During the Roaring Twenties and early 1930s, Lang single-handedly laid down the blueprint for guitar solos as we know them today. His playing dexterity and wealth of harmonic knowledge allowed him to introduce single-note solos and complex chord voicings, sometimes alternating between the two in a radically unconventional fashion that created a precedent for guitarists that came after him. Lang's impressive technique combined the percussive attack of jazz with classical finger picking that created a dynamic, fluid style. He was able to move seamlessly between rhythm and lead and presented the guitar as a versatile instrument with expression. These innovations helped form a lasting foundation for jazz guitar and introduce the instrument into mainstream music. Lang's influence and impact evolved by collaborating with some of the most popular artists of the 1920s and 1930s. He frequently played with childhood friend and violinist Joe Venuti, and together they formed one of the first great jazz guitar violin duos. But perhaps the most significant collaboration was with Bing Crosby. He played on many of Crosby's early recordings, proving the guitar could function as a rhythmic and harmonic foundation. He might have even recorded the very first guitar solo on Crosby's The Man I Love in 1923. He inspired legends he didn't work with, but would go on to forge legacies of their own. A who's who of early guitar greats, including Django Reinhardt, Charlie Christian, Les Paul, and eventually some young lad from Liverpool called George Harrison. Outside of jazz, he also worked with early blues players like Lonnie Johnson. Some of their earliest recordings showcased enlightened dueling and call-and-response arrangements between two guitarists that have inspired rock and blues musicians for nearly a century. Even though he contributed so much to the guitar and music in general, Lang is still a relatively obscure figure outside of the jazz world. There are a few reasons why his story got lost to history. As mentioned above, he passed away young in 1933. Lang dealt with chronic laryngitis over his short life, and purportedly at the urging of Crosby, decided to have a tonsillectomy at the Park West Hospital in Manhattan. Even in the 1930s, such a procedure was relatively routine. But sadly, and for reasons that have never been explained, Lang never woke up. He was just 30 years old. This early demise meant that many of the artists he worked with and influenced would take his torch and run with it to greater heights than he'd ever imagined, but it doubtlessly overshadowed his contribution. It's also worth remembering that this was the pre-electric guitar era. He played acoustic guitars. With the ongoing rise of electric guitars in the late 1930s, his influence on music was further overshadowed by a newer, louder sound that was destined to become the next big thing in popular music. Furthermore, Lang's role in the groups he played in was more of an accompanist than a billable name for the most part. Much of his work was in support roles, and he was less visible to casual music fans. His dedicated jazz background probably also doesn't help. Even though jazz was very popular in the 1920s, it was quickly supplanted in the popular consciousness in the years and decades to come. Article ends with this. Eddie Lang transformed the guitar into an instrument that could lead bands. In doing so, he created a new voice, not just for his music, but for generations of guitarists that came after him. You can contend he's not just one of the forefathers of jazz guitar, but guitar-based music altogether. He might not be a household name, but his story is a call to remember one of the earliest trailblazers of the guitar. Technical acumen, a sense of harmony, and collaborative spirit make him one of the most important and underappreciated figures in the history of the instrument, and it reverberates in all guitar-based music. Despite history largely overlooking him, what is certain is the indelible mark he left. It's time Eddie Lang gets the recognition he deserves among the greats who helped shape modern music and guitar playing as we know it today. Without him, all the timeless guitar solos we know and love might never have happened. In local music news, PBS North Carolina presents the music series Shaped by Sound, which features North Carolina's brightest stars sharing their songs and stories. The Thursday, March 20, 2025 episode features Mipso, a North Carolina quartet from Chapel Hill, known for combining a traditional string band format with close harmony and a variety of modern influences. Shaped by Sound is available to stream on PBS.org and the free PBS app, available on iPhone, Apple TV, Android TV, Android smartphones, and Amazon. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is the significance of the film Blackboard Jungle? Was it A, it helped spark the rock and roll revolution in music? Was it B, it uncovered the CIA's connection to the Vietnam War? Was it C, it featured the song Catch a Falling Star by Perry Como? Or was it D, it is credited with establishing distance education as an effective learning option? And the correct answer? Answer A. It helped spark the rock and roll revolution in music. As noted in Britannica, Blackboard Jungle, an American social commentary film released in 1955, highlighted violence in urban schools and also helped spark the rock and roll revolution by featuring the hit song Rock Around the Clock, 1954, by Bill Haley and the Comets. In 1956, the movie Rock Around the Clock with Bill Haley made its premiere in Washington, D.C. It became rock and roll's first hit song on both sides of the Atlantic. It was first recorded by Bill Haley on his Comments on April 12, 1954, and released as a B-side to 13 Women and Only One Man in Town in May of 1954. Though it gained significant traction and became a major hit after being featured in the 1955 film Blackboard Jungle. In 1955, the U.S. tried to ban that film, Blackboard Jungle, because they felt the soundtrack and the film's portrayal of juvenile delinquents would incite delinquency. It highlighted violence in urban schools and also helped spark the rock and roll revolution. And the answer to our second question, what is the title of the very first gold single certified by the Recording Industry Association of America? Was it A, Glenn Miller's In the Mood, B, Perry Como's Catch a Falling Star, C, Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel, or D, the Beatles' I Wanna Hold Your Hand? Correct answer? Answer B, Perry Como's Catch a Falling Star. On March 14, 1958, the RIAA certified Como's hit single, Catch a Falling Star, as its first ever gold record. Como won the 1958 Grammy Award for Best Vocal Performance Male for Catch a Falling Star. That song was written by Paul Vance and Lee Pockris. That writing pair was also responsible for penning the famous 1960 hit song, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. So let's close out today's program with the appropriately titled Guitar Genesis, as a tribute to the guitar godfather, Eddie Lang. Out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.